sounded hysterical when she called me, and she must be wondering why no one has shown up. I thought Zeller would send his attorneys to her, but apparently it's against company policy, which none of us knew. I'm planning to quit today. The guy's a son of a bitch, and I'm convinced now he's a crook, Ed said heatedly.
Are you romantically involved with her? Weinstein wanted to know as much as possible before he saw her.
No, I'm not, Ed said matter-of-factly. I was her immediate supervisor. She reported to me, and we became friends.
Does she have kids?
Two daughters. They're both designers, too.
In answer to your earlier question, I can get her out of jail, but I'm not sure when. Today is Friday, and she has to be arraigned, and the judge has to set bail, unless we can get him to dismiss the case. If he doesn't dismiss, there will have to be a grand jury hearing, probably after the arraignment, but that will all depend on how bad this looks, especially if her employer is throwing her under the bus, which you seem to indicate.
It's the impression he gave me yesterday. He's protecting himself. If they go after him, it could be really bad for him. He'd rather sacrifice her. I should have seen it coming, but I didn't, Ed said, feeling guilty again.
The idea that they might use her as an example made him even more frightened for her.
I'll try to get in to see her this morning and let you know what I find out.
Ed liked the sound of him. He seemed young, smart, and down to earth. At least she'd have a lawyer now and be in good hands, and maybe Weinstein could even get the case dismissed. Ed didn't see how they could charge her with the crime. She'd been operating under direct orders from the owner of the company. How could they prosecute her? It didn't make any sense. He hated Zeller for that. He seemed far more Machiavellian now than Ed had ever feared. He'd thought him a little sleazy, not an outright crook. An hour later, Ed walked into Paul Zeller's office. He'd already been upstairs and collected his things and the sketches in his desk. The door to Paul's office was open, and he was drinking a cup of coffee his assistant had brought him, and he looked up with a broad smile when he saw Ed.
"I was just going to call you. We have to figure out some special promotion to replace those bags."
But he didn't look worried about it as Ed stared at him, and he never mentioned Sidney's name.
"That's it? You're worried about a new promotion, while you let Sidney rot in jail?"
"She's not rotting. She's a well-connected woman. I'm sure she's called an attorney by now. She made a big mistake."
"No, you did," Ed said bluntly, with fury in his eyes. "The only mistake she made was taking a job here, and so did I. I'm here to correct that mistake this morning."
Paul looked surprised.
"I quit," Ed said, looking at him directly.
"Without notice? You can't just walk out like that. You're our chief design consultant and creative director. You have a responsibility to the company and to your team," Paul said angrily. He hadn't expected to lose Ed in the bargain.
Sidney was expendable, which is why he had used her. Ed was not. Not easily, in any case.
"And you have a responsibility to your employees, but apparently you don't see it that way."
"I warn you, Ed, if you walk out now, your name will be mud in the industry."
"I doubt that. Your name is already dirt. I've been defending you for 3 years. That was my big mistake. I'm done," he said, and turned around to walk out as Paul stood up at his desk with a wicked look in his eye.
"If you walk out now, I can still say that you were in on it with Sidney. You're not clear of this either," he said in a menacing tone.
Ed turned to face him again with an expression that was rock hard.
"If you even think about doing that to me, my family will put you out of business. You'll lose every factory worker you have in China, and your factories. You're a scumbag. Don't ever threaten me."
And with that, Ed walked out as Paul stared after him and sat down in his chair without a word. Sidney was brushing her teeth in her cell when a guard came to tell her that her lawyer was there to see her. She had no comb or brush for her hair, and she tried to smooth it down with her hands. The blue uniform they'd given her was enormous on her, and so were the bus shoes she'd been given. They handcuffed her again, let her out of her cell, and walked her through three locked gates and into the attorney conference room, where a man in a suit was standing, waiting for her. She assumed that he had been sent by Paul Zeller. It never occurred to her that he had been referred by Ed, or the lengths he'd gone to find a lawyer for her. She had no idea that Paul would abandon her, since she'd been acting on his behalf, on his orders, as part of her job. Steve Weinstein introduced himself and said he'd been sent by Ed Chin, and she looked surprised.
"You don't work for Paul Zeller?"
"No, I don't. As I understand it from Ed, your work contract with Zeller states that if something like this happens in the line of duty, you're responsible for yourself. Zeller is not going to help you. He washed his hands of you when you got arrested."
She was shocked by what he said.
"Why don't you tell me the whole story, starting with the trip to China and what happened there and what happened in customs yesterday?" He took notes while she explained it all to him, and by the end of it, he agreed with Ed. She'd been set up to be the fall guy for Zeller if anything went wrong. And he strongly suspected that Zeller knew he was buying stolen goods, and probably not for the first time. "Did you ever suspect the bags were real and maybe altered in some way and not copies?"
"No, I didn't. I thought the quality was unusually good, but they make some remarkable products in China. Everyone in the fashion industry uses their factories now. But I never, ever suspected they were stolen."
Everything about her suggested honesty and innocence to him. She looked dazed by what was happening to her. "Just so you know, Zeller is claiming now that you were in collusion with the manufacturer and got a commission from them to bring stolen goods into the States."
"Oh, my God."
She was horrified.
"Do you think the judge will believe him?"
There were tears in her eyes as she asked. This was the worst thing that had ever happened to her, much worse than Andrew having left her out of his will and losing everything.
"Possibly," the lawyer answered her honestly.
"It's my job to convince him that you're innocent, which I believe is the truth."
"I am. I swear to you, I never suspected they were stolen goods. What are we going to do?"
She looked bereft as she sat there staring at him.
"Can I leave now?"
"Unfortunately, you can't. The judge isn't sitting today, I checked. Your arraignment is set for Monday. So, you're stuck here for the weekend. You can't leave until you've been arraigned. That's where you plead guilty or not guilty, and the judge will set bail, probably for around $50,000. I assume you can post bond," he said, watching her face, and saw panic in her eyes. She didn't have $50,000 left, or even close, and she had no collateral to get a loan.
"And if I can't?" she asked in a small voice.
"Then you wait in jail for a grand jury hearing and eventually a trial. Or maybe I can get you released on your own recognizance. You're not a flight risk. It depends what judge we get. We might even be able to get the case dismissed if they don't have a strong case against you, but I think Zeller would testify against you to avoid prosecution himself. Everything he did was designed to make you responsible if he got caught. And so far it worked. My initial fee to represent you is $25,000. It goes up to $50,000 if I get the case summarily dismissed, and $100,000 if we go to trial. And criminal law fees are payable in advance, but I don't think it'll get to trial. At worst, I think they'll make a deal for probation if you plead guilty."
"But I'm not guilty," she said desperately.
"There's always a risk if you go to trial. Things could go wrong. Juries are unpredictable."
"Do you think I'll go to prison?"
she asked in a whisper.
"Hopefully not."
But he didn't want to promise what he wasn't sure he could deliver. "But it could happen, if everything goes wrong, and if Zeller is out to bury you to save himself. I don't want him on the witness stand against you. According to your friend, Zeller is a liar and a convincing one and possibly a crook. I'm sure he knew they were stolen goods, but he's not going to admit that to anyone. I'm going to do my very best to keep you out of prison if you hire me. I'm sorry you have to sit here until Monday. There's nothing I can do about that. He was thorough, honest, and matter-of-fact. She nodded, unable to speak. She was thinking of what she'd say to her girls. She would have to tell them the truth. She just didn't know when, and if she couldn't make bail on Monday, she'd have to wait for trial in jail. And Steve Weinstein told her it could take up to a year to go to trial. If you do hire me, he went on, I'd like to engage some detectives and see if we can find someone who can testify that Zeller knew he was bringing in stolen goods, and maybe even that he's done it before. If we get lucky, someone will talk and you'll be off the hook. She was panicking as she listened to him. If everything went against her, she could wind up in prison, and as far as she was concerned, she might as well be dead. She was beginning to wish she were, not for the first time in recent months. "I'll see you on Monday, Mrs. Wells," he said as he stood up. "You can hire another lawyer after the arraignment if you prefer, but at least let's get you out of jail." She nodded and didn't dare ask him how much he'd charge for that. She thanked him for coming to see her and was taken back to her cell in handcuffs again when he left. She lay on her bed, thinking about everything he'd told her. She felt as though her life was over. She hadn't moved, eaten, or gotten up when Ed came to see her during visiting hours that afternoon. She'd been advised that she had the right to a 1-hour social visit per week. The guard told her she had a visitor, and she asked who it was. "I'm not your social secretary," the officer snapped, put the handcuffs on again, and took her to a room where she was strip-searched before entering the visiting area. She saw Ed waiting for her and began to cry the moment she saw him. It tore his heart out when he looked at her and was allowed to hug her, and then they sat down in a small room full of inmates and their visitors. She was designated as a pre-trial inmate. She looked terrible, as though she was in shock. She hadn't felt that bad since Andrew's death that summer. "Are you okay, Sydney?" he asked her, and she nodded as they held hands. She could hardly speak, she was so upset.
"Sort of. Thank you for finding me a lawyer. I never thought something like this could happen, or that Paul would turn out to be such a shit and a dishonest person," she whispered to him. "He's very slick. I never trusted him. I told you that in the beginning, but I never thought he'd go this far. I quit this morning. He's trying to claim you made a deal with the manufacturer to get himself off the hook. Steve Weinstein told me, 'I'm sorry you quit your job over this.'
'I'm not.' He smiled at her. 'It was time. I don't want to work for a bastard like him.'
What am I going to tell my girls? They're going to be mortified, especially if it hits the papers."
"It could," Ed said honestly, "especially if they made an example of her, as Weinstein had suggested to him."
"Imagine if I go to prison," she said, looking terrified.
Just the past 24 hours had nearly broken her spirit. Time in prison would kill her.
"You won't. You're innocent. Maybe he can get the case dismissed."
She nodded, but he could tell she didn't believe him. She was humiliated and desperately afraid, and he couldn't even hug her to console her except at the beginning and end of the visit. But at least they could hold hands. And after an hour, they were notified that their allotted time was over. Ed hugged her again, and she thanked him for coming and waved at him miserably as he left. And when he got outside in the cold December air, tears rolled down his cheeks. Sydney was being strip-searched for contraband by then, and was led back to her cell afterward. She lay on her bed after his visit and didn't get up again. She didn't eat, and on Saturday morning, she called Sabrina. She had to call her collect, and Sabrina took the call, sounding puzzled.
"Where are you?"
There was an endless pause before she answered, as she choked back a sob. She could barely get the words out.
"I'm in jail," Sidney said miserably.
"I didn't want you to worry if you tried to call me." But Sabrina was even more worried, knowing where her mother was. Sidney told her the whole story, and Sabrina was almost too stunned to speak.
"I told you that guy was scum," Sabrina said angrily, not sure who she was angrier at, Paul Zeller or her mother, for being so foolish and naive.
The story didn't surprise her, but she was horrified for her mother.
"He has a terrible reputation. Can I bail you out?"
"Not till Monday. The judge won't set bail till then, and it might be very expensive."
She didn't tell her she might not have the money to pay for it. She'd been careful with her salary, but her funds were running low.
Sabrina asked for her lawyer's name, and her mother gave it to her.
"I don't want you to come to court, though. Wait until I get home, and you can't visit me.
I only get one visit a week, and Ed Chin came to see me. He found the lawyer for me." They talked for a few more minutes, and then hung up. Sabrina called the lawyer immediately and discussed the whole situation with him, and he told her how bail worked and how much it might be. And then she called her sister, and Sophie cried pitifully when Sabrina told her what had happened. They both cried, worried about their mother, and Sophie was distraught that they couldn't visit her. The situation was unbelievable. The two girls spent Saturday night together, and Sabrina told her everything the lawyer had said. She had already made the decision to pay her mother's bail. Sabrina owned her apartment and would use it as collateral with the bail bondsman. She wasn't going to leave their mother in jail a second longer than she had to. Steve Weinstein had said he would walk Sabrina through the process on Monday morning before the arraignment. It was an endless weekend for all of them. Sabrina and Sophie worrying about what would happen to their mother, and Sidney lying silently in her cell, wishing she were dead. Chapter 8. The arraignment on Monday morning was just as Steve Weinstein had told her it would be. It was uneventful, and there were no surprises. Sidney wore her own clothes to court. She pleaded not guilty to the charges of trafficking in stolen goods and attempting to import them. Steve first tried to get the case dismissed, but with her signature on all the importation documents, the evidence was too strong against her. And when Steve tried to get her released on her own recognizance, the federal prosecutor objected and the judge refused. He set bail at $50,000 and moved on to the next case. Steve Weinstein's worst fear was confirmed, that they wanted to make an example of her. The judge could easily have let her out on her own recognizance. She wasn't a flight risk, but instead he had set bail. Sidney stood staring at the judge in despair for a minute, and then spoke to her attorney.
"I'll have to stay in jail," she whispered. "I can't pay the bail."
"It's already been taken care of," he answered quietly. "Your daughter Sabrina set it all up for you. As soon as I notify the bail bondsman, you've been arraigned, and the amount of bail you'll be free to leave."
Tears rushed to Sidney's eyes immediately.
"I can't let her do that. It's not right."
"She also gave me a check for $25,000 for my initial fee, until we know if it's going to trial."
Sidney was horrified by what she was costing her daughter, and she was out of a job, too. She didn't want to be a burden to Sabrina. The whole situation was mortifying. Steve tried to reassure her.
"Let's just get you out on bail, and we can worry about the rest later."
She looked even worse than when he'd seen her on Friday, and he knew she wouldn't survive it for a year if she didn't let Sabrina post bail, and Sidney knew that too. Now she really had to sell the Paris apartment. It was all she had to sell to pay Steve's fee for the trial, and she wanted to pay Sabrina back as quickly as possible. A guard led her away, and Steve went to post bail for her. Sabrina had already taken care of the financial details that morning, and half an hour later, Sidney was on the street with him, in her own clothes, and she let him take her home. She felt shell-shocked from everything that had happened. Glancing around at all the trees and buildings and people walking in the streets, she felt as though she had come back to Earth after being terrified she was never going to be free again. They had been the four most frightening days of her life, and the guards and criminals were like actors in a bad movie, only it was real. She walked into her apartment, sat down on the couch, and looked around as though seeing it for the first time. She called Sabrina and thanked her for posting bail and promised to pay her as soon as she could. She was ashamed that her daughter had had to use her apartment as collateral. "What are you going to do now, Mom?" she asked her quietly.
"I don't know. Look for another job, I guess."
And she couldn't even use her one recent job as a reference.
"What about you? Have you heard back from any of the places where you interviewed?"
She was worried about Sabrina now, too. Everything was in a mess again.
"Not yet."
They both tried to keep the conversation normal and not mention the fact that she'd just been in jail. Her life had become a sordid tale of losing her husband, her home, her money, being arrested, and going to jail. And what if she was convicted and went to prison? She couldn't even let herself think about it. She had an appointment at Steve Weinstein's office the next day to discuss the grand jury and what lay ahead. Sabrina promised to bring dinner over that night and said Sophie was coming too. Sidney said she was too tired to go out. She'd hardly slept in 4 days. And as though on cue, the phone rang again when they hung up. She hadn't bothered to look at who was calling and almost groaned when she heard Veronica's voice. It was laughable. She had called to tell her that the twins were selling some of her favorite paintings at Sotheby's. Veronica had seen them in the catalog and recognized them immediately.
"I thought you should know," she said sympathetically, and this time Sidney was in no mood to be polite to her. "Why? Do you think I'm going to buy them back?"
"Of course not. I just thought that it might upset me more than I already am.
As a matter of fact, it does. Why don't you call me with good news sometime? That would be a lot more fun."
"Fine, I'll do that," she said brusquely, and hung up a minute later. Sidney was totally fed up with people who wanted to take advantage of her, like Paul, or wanted to make her feel bad, like Veronica. She felt better after she'd brushed her off. Ed called her after that. On the spur of the moment, she invited him to join them for dinner that night.
"After all this, I want you to meet my girls."
He sounded hesitant, not wanting to intrude, but he agreed to come, and she thanked him again for finding Steve Weinstein for her.
"I'm seeing him tomorrow to discuss the case," she said.
"They should be putting Zella in jail, not you," Ed said angrily.
"Steve said he wants to hire a detective to see if he can get someone to admit that Paul knew they were stolen goods."
"That sounds like a good idea."
She told him to come at 7, and he arrived before the girls. He brought her a bunch of flowers to cheer her up and a bottle of wine to share with her daughters, and he invited her to lunch the next day. When they arrived, the girls were startled to see someone in the apartment they didn't know. Sidney introduced them, and they were all shy at first. Ed was nervous that they would hate him because of where he'd worked, and the girls were uncomfortable for the first few minutes. They had brought Thai food and sashimi from downtown, and by the time they set it out on their mother's small dining table, They were talking about fashion with Ed, and had found common ground. Sydney smiled as she listened to them, and life began to seem normal again. They didn't bring up the court case until the end of dinner, and by then they were into their second bottle of wine, and everyone had relaxed. Ed liked both of Sydney's daughters, and they all agreed that they hated Paul Zeller and what he had done to her. It was after midnight when they all left. It had been a nice evening, and Sydney sat in her living room, thinking of where she had been the night before. She still couldn't believe she'd been arrested, and now she had to go to trial, and she was embarrassed that her daughter had had to post bail for her, but if she hadn't, Sydney would still be in jail. It was the first time she had ever been dependent on her children, and it wasn't a good feeling. She felt like an utter failure, and things had been going so much better for a while. Sydney was up early the next morning to go to Steve Weinstein's office, downtown near the federal courthouse. They spent 2 hours going over every detail of the case. She agreed to let him hire a detective to see what they could find out about Paul. She didn't know how she was going to pay for it, but she knew she had no choice. And they discussed the grand jury investigation that would be conducted in secret and would determine if the case went to trial. Sabrina called her as soon as she left the lawyer's office with good news for a change. She had gotten the job she wanted for a higher salary than she'd had before. Sydney hoped it meant that their luck had changed. At least something wonderful had happened to her daughter. It buoyed her spirits as she rode the subway back uptown. Sophie called her as soon as she got home. "Guess who's on page 6 today?" she said, almost chortling as her mother groaned. "Please don't tell me I am for going to jail." Sophie read her the piece. It intimated that Kelly's husband was having an affair. The woman he'd been seen with at a hotel recently was a well-known heiress around town, his specialty, apparently, and Sydney smiled as she listened. "It's karma, Mom," Sophie said. "She deserves it." And Sydney hated to admit it, but she agreed with her. She met Ed for lunch shortly afterward at a restaurant they both liked, and he told her he was going to Hong Kong. "For good?" She looked devastated. He'd become her closest friend, her only friend now, and she had hoped he'd stayed around and get another job in New York. "No, just for a week. I want to talk to my father." "About going into the family business?" Now that he had quit his job, she realized that he was likely to go back and go to work for them. He had gotten all the experience he needed in Europe and New York, but he surprised her with what he said. "I want to start my own line. I think I'm ready. I want to know if they'll help me do it here. I want to stay in New York." And then he looked at her seriously. "Would you work on it with me, Sydney? It'll probably take me 6 months or a year to get it off the ground, but I want to start setting it up right away. I looked at a space in Chelsea this morning. What do you think? Would you do it with me?" "You know a lot more than I do about running a business. I'm just a designer." But she had learned a lot at Lady Louise, too, mostly from him. "And a year from now, I might be in prison," she said, looking grim for a minute. "Not if Steve Weinstein is worth what you're paying him," he said soberly. She gave him a small, wintry smile in response. "I'm not paying him. Sabrina is. I want to pay her back as soon as I can. I can't until I sell the apartment in Paris, and I still have a tenant there for now." "I could give you stock in the company, so you'd have equity. I want to keep it small at first. I want to start with casual day wear. I don't want to get too grand." She loved the idea, and they took a long walk after lunch to talk about it. He was leaving for Hong Kong the next day. He'd already told his mother about the project, but he wanted to discuss it with his father face to face. He would be harder to convince. He still wanted his son to come home and join the family business with him and his uncles, but Ed didn't want to live in Hong Kong yet. "I'm happy here," he told her. She was excited about his project and smiling when she went home. If he convinced his father to help him back it, she would have a job again, doing work she could respect this time, working for an honest man. She was in a good mood all that night until Sabrina called her the next day. The story of her arrest was in Women's Wear Daily, and they had quoted Paul Zeller talking about how severely disappointed he was that a designer of such great talent would stoop to illegal activities. It made him sound like the injured party and her like a criminal. It was mortifying, and she was worried about Sabrina immediately.
"Do you think this will impact you in your new job?"
"I don't think so, Mom," she said quietly. "I called them about it this morning, and they were very nice and felt terrible for you. Paul Zeller doesn't have a lot of fans. I think most people will know you didn't do it and took the rap for him. But in any case, they weren't upset with me and assured me it wouldn't affect my job." Sydney was relieved to hear it.
"When do you start?"
"In a week. It gives me a little time to get organized and catch my breath." Sydney was especially happy that Sabrina would be employed again, since she had spent most of her savings on her mother's bail and legal fees. Things were slowly turning around for them. Sabrina had a new job she was excited about at an even better firm. Ed wanted Sydney to start a business with him if his family agreed to help him financially, and hopefully Steve Weinstein would be able to help her with the legal proceedings and keep her out of prison. She was still living on a shoestring, and she had criminal charges against her, but at least some good things were happening. She could see daylight slowly streaking across the sky. The dawn hadn't come yet, but Sydney had hope again. It was a start. Chapter 9 Ed came back from Hong Kong a week before Christmas, and as soon as he landed, he called Sydney with good news. He had met with his father and uncles, and after some debate, they'd agreed to finance his clothing business. He had an excellent track record and had held design jobs with important, responsible firms. He knew the business and was capable of pulling together a talented design team. He had presented Sydney's CV and credentials to them as well. They had given him the green light, and he wanted to get started as soon as possible. His goal was to have his first fashion show on the runway during Fashion Week in September, 9 months from now.
"It's a go," he said when he called Sydney, and then told her all the details.
He wanted to look at the Chelsea location with her in the next few days and rent it immediately if she liked it as much as he did, and thought it could work as a home for their fledgling business. It was an exciting time for him. At last, he wouldn't be working for someone else and could do everything the way he wanted. He had no investors to satisfy, only his family.
"Do you have time to look at the Chelsea location with me tomorrow?" he asked her, and she said she did. "This is so wonderful!"
She was as thrilled as he was. He sent the realtor an email that night, and they made an appointment for 10 o'clock the next morning. When Sydney got there, he was relieved to see that she looked much better and more relaxed than when he'd left. Her 4 days in jail had been harrowing and taken a toll on her. They went over every inch of the location and tried to envision where they would put everyone and how it would work, and by their estimation, it was perfect. The realtor promised to have the lease to him by that afternoon.
"Let's go to IKEA tomorrow and buy furniture," Sydney said enthusiastically.
The place had been freshly painted, and there was no construction work to do. It was in move-in condition. Ed wanted to start hiring people as soon as possible. He'd already made a list of his dream design team, with Sydney and himself as the lead designers. But they needed design assistants, too, preferably recently out of school, so they wouldn't be too expensive or too inflexible, and would have fresh, innovative ideas. They went to buy desks, tables, chairs, file cabinets, and shelving the next day, and outfitted a small kitchen. They bought comfortable desk chairs, and Ed was going to buy the computers. They had rented a truck to bring everything back from IKEA, and unloaded most of it themselves when they got back to Chelsea. They had hired someone to put the furniture together. They sat back and admired the results at the end of the day, and then Sydney got ready to leave to buy a small Christmas tree for her apartment.
"What are you doing on Christmas Eve, by the way?" she asked him before she left.
"Nothing much. I haven't had time to think about it."
"Why don't you come to dinner with me and the girls, just casual, at my place?"
Sophie had already said that her boyfriend would probably join them if he was up to it, and there was room for 6 people at her table if they kept their elbows close to their bodies and used her narrow chairs.
"I'd love it," Ed said, smiling broadly.
After that, she went to buy her tree, which took up a corner in the living room, but looked festive, and she had bought decorations. She didn't allow herself to think of the 14-foot tree they'd had in the living room in Connecticut every Christmas, or the garland of white flowers over the main doorway, or the wreath on the door. She had bought a tiny one with bells and pine cones on it, and attached it to the front door. And even though the tree was small, it smelled like Christmas, and filled the apartment with a scent of pine. The ornaments she'd bought for the tree were all red and gold, with some tiny teddy bears and toy soldiers. It looked cheerful and happy when she was finished. Steve Weinstein called her after that to give her the date of her next court hearing, in April. It was months away, but would give them time to pursue their investigation of Paul Zeller and what he might have known about the stolen purses. And the grand jury investigation would go on during that time. After Steve had told her about her hearing date, she decided to invite him to dinner on Christmas Eve, too. "I usually go home to Boston for the holidays," he told her, touched to be asked to their family Christmas dinner. "But this year, my brother and sister are with their in-laws, and my parents are in Florida. They might be moving there." The invitation sounded warm and friendly to him, and he liked his new client and the idea of getting to know her better. He had already told her that he had never been married, had no children, and was 38 years old, and she thought her girls would like him. "My family is Jewish," he added, "but we're not religious, and we always celebrate Christmas. We get the best of both worlds that way."
"I love Christmas, too," she sighed softly then. "It's our first one without my husband."
She was trying not to dwell on it, but the memories haunted her, especially late at night, which had become her least favorite time of day. Her worries loomed large at that hour.
"Your children's father?"
He was curious about her and sensed heartaches she was too polite to mention.
"No, he died 20 years ago. After we divorced. He had moved to Texas with a new wife, and they didn't see much of him, but he was still their father. I remarried 16 years ago to a wonderful man. He died in an accident this summer. It's been a big adjustment,
in more ways than she was willing to disclose to him.
There have been some complications with the estate.
2 greedy, nasty stepdaughters, and nothing for the widow. She was still angry at Andrew about it, at times. It was hard not to be, for dying and for not taking care of what he should have. If he had, everything would have been different. She wouldn't have had to work, and she wouldn't be facing jail. But on the other hand, she had met Ed Chin and was going to have the thrill of starting a business with him. She tried to maintain a glass-half-full outlook, except in the wee hours, when she was terrified of running out of money and going to prison.
"It's been a difficult year," she acknowledged, topped off by her recent arrest for trafficking in stolen goods. "You never really know what's going to happen in life. The last 6 months have taught me that."
"That's true in a good way, too," he reminded her. "You never know what fantastic event or person is going to come along and change your luck and life forever. Is your daughter going to be there for dinner, by the way? I had a nice conversation with her when you were being detained." He tried to find a gentle way to express it without saying "when you were in jail." He knew how shaken she still was by it, and frightened of the future. The possibility of prison was horrifying. and once or twice she wondered if she had the right to start a business with Ed. What if she was convicted and went to prison? She didn't want to leave him in the lurch, nor miss the opportunity he was offering her. She brought it up with Ed that night, when they were talking on the phone about their plans. He had texted her all evening before that, every time he had an idea or a name to share with her. They'd been trying to come up with a name for their business and were leaning toward Sidney Chin. It was distinctive, and she wanted it to have an Asian feeling to it, out of deference to him and his family, who were making their new venture possible. She was grateful for their willingness to include her in the plan, despite her current problems.
"What if I go to prison? Have you thought of that?" she asked him seriously.
Steve had told her it was a real possibility if things went badly for her at the trial, and he assumed there would be one. There was too much evidence against her for the charges to be dismissed. Paul Zeller was a powerful man and had covered himself well. He had begun lying to everyone and the press from the moment it happened. He had spoken to the U.S. attorney, who had made it clear they were not going to go easy on her, and they wanted to question her in depth about Paul Zeller.
"You can't just sit there for the next year waiting for the other shoe to drop," Ed admonished her. "You have to go on living. I don't think they'll convict you, but if they do, we'll deal with it when it happens. I'm not going to miss out on building something really important with you, because Paul Zeller is an asshole, and we're scared. I've waited my whole life to do this, and I want to do it with you."
He had profound respect for her after working with her. In fact, he'd been waiting 7 years to start his own venture since he graduated from design school.
"Does your family know about the case against me?"
She hoped he'd been honest with them about her arrest.
"I told them what happened. They were very sorry to hear about it, but it didn't scare them off. They checked out your lawyer again, by the way, and he has an excellent reputation."
"I like him." She was grateful to Ed and his family for that as well.
"He's coming to dinner on Christmas Eve, too. He's smart and seems like a really nice guy."
And then she thought of something. He never talked about it much and was alone most of the time and working, but she thought he might like to bring someone with him to dinner, so she asked him.
"You're sweet to ask. I've seen someone a few times, but there are no major heartthrobs in my life. I don't have time for that. I'm too busy to engage in a relationship and do it justice. Maybe in a few years, when we get our business off the ground, but not now. Thanks anyway."
"You sound like Sabrina. She says exactly the same thing, and Sophie has a boyfriend, officially anyway, but they hardly see each other, and he's very eccentric. Fashion isn't fertile ground for romance. No one has the energy or the time."
"How did you manage to design and date and marry Andrew?"
He had wondered about that for a while.
"It was a race against time every day, with work, him, and two little girls. He convinced me to give it up when we got married. He wanted me free to travel with him, and not working gave me a chance to be with my kids. I missed working for a few years, but then I was glad I'd done it. I enjoyed the time I could spend with him and my girls. Your family life is very different when you're working full-time. There's never enough of you to go around and do a good job at work, too."
"Well, just make sure you don't do that again," Ed said, sounding worried.
"I mean, get married and quit your job with me."
"You have nothing to worry about. I'm not planning to get married again, and I don't have young kids at home anymore," she reminded him. "My girls don't have time to see me either. They work as hard as we do, and Sabrina is crazy. She loves what she does more than she's ever loved a man."
"That's how I feel about it," he said comfortably. "And I'll never give up my work again for a man," Sidney said with determination. She couldn't imagine being with another man now.
She'd had what she considered the perfect relationship and a great marriage with Andrew. It was only now that he was gone that everything had fallen apart and cast a shadow on her memories. But when he was alive, she'd been happy. They'd rarely argued, were kind to each other, and shared many of the same interests, and he'd been wonderful to her girls. But after the way it had ended, she never wanted to be dependent on a man again.
"Just make sure you stick to that," Ed warned her. "If Prince Charming comes along after we start the business, tell him you're a working woman and you won't give it up."
"I promise," she said fervently, and meant it. They said goodnight to each other then, and she knew they'd be texting and talking constantly in the coming days and months. They had a lot of decisions to make, and she already had some ideas for sketches and designs for their show in the fall. She wanted to do a predominantly white collection, since the clothes they would be showing to the trade would be in stores for the following summer. The guests arrived on Christmas Eve at 7:30. Sydney offered them a choice between hot toddies and eggnog laced with rum. It was one of their Christmas traditions. The apartment looked pretty with the Christmas decorations she'd bought, and there were candles lit everywhere. There was just enough seating for the six of them, with some effort, and it was very cozy. Sydney was wearing a long plaid wool skirt and a red sweater, which she'd worn on Christmas before and had brought with her hair straight down her back. Sabrina came in a short black cocktail dress of her own design, which showed off her long, sexy legs. Her dark hair was shining, and she'd worn it down like her mother. She was wearing bright red lipstick and high heels, and looked beautiful as she hugged her mother. She was the first to arrive, and had brought two bottles of good French wine. She was in a celebratory mood about her new job. She'd only been employed there for a week and already loved it. Her previous boss's impulsive reaction to fire her over the knockoffs of her designs by Lady Louise had proved to be an extraordinary blessing. She had leapt in at full speed at her new job and was designing additions to their collection for February's Fashion Week. She was working harder than ever and had never been happier.
"Who else is coming, Mom?" she asked, as she followed her mother over to the kitchen counter. She could smell a turkey in the oven, and she peeked at the vegetables on the stove. Sydney had been working on the meal all day with her only cookbook, and it had turned out well. She had made all their favorites. The dishes that came with the apartment weren't pretty, but she had managed to set a nice table anyway, with candles, a few gold angels, and some pine cones. The whole apartment was fragrant and smelled like the holidays.
"I told you I invited Ed Chen," whom she and Sophie had met once. "Sophie is bringing Grayson, making a rare cameo appearance."
They both laughed at that. He was phobic about families and commitment, and said he hated holidays, but had agreed to come after Sophie had begged him to for weeks. He was a talented graphic designer and an unusual person. He had lost his parents as a child and had grown up in foster care and had moved around a lot. He and Sophie loved each other, but he didn't want marriage, children, or long-term commitment. Sydney thought Sophie was young enough to put up with his limitations, but she didn't think the relationship would go far. They had been dating for a year, and any time he thought the relationship was getting too serious, he stopped seeing her for a while, and then wandered back when things had cooled off. Her mother and sister were surprised she was still with him, but Sophie insisted he was a good guy and saw virtues in him that others didn't. He was a prickly porcupine at times.
"And I invited my lawyer, Steve Weinstein. He said he didn't have any plans. And Sabrina," she said, looking seriously at her older daughter, "I want you to know how grateful I am for your arranging my bail and paying his retainer. I intend to repay you as soon as I can."
She was planning to sell a piece of jewelry if she had to, although she didn't have many and had been trying to hang on to everything she could to sell in the future if she needed to. But this was one of those times. She had depleted Sabrina's savings, and she wasn't going to let it stay that way for long.
I don't need the money right now, Mom, and there was no way I was going to let you stay in jail or not have a decent lawyer.
You think he's okay?
She had liked him when they spoke, and he seemed competent.
I think he's very good, and Ed's family checked him out.
She knew that didn't mean he would be able to get her off. There were variables in the case, and as Steve had told her, once a matter went to trial, the results were unpredictable. It wasn't going to be a shoe-in, but it wasn't a lost cause either, and hopefully they would find damning evidence on Paul Zeller before they went to trial. They were still talking about it when Ed Chin rang the buzzer, and when he came in the door, he greeted Sabrina, pleased to see her. He congratulated her on her new job, and they launched into animated conversation immediately. He admired her dress. She admitted that the design was one of hers, and he told her he loved it. Ed had worn jeans, a black turtleneck, a black cashmere jacket, and suede loafers, and looked as chic as Sabrina. He had the wardrobe and the style to wear it, and had all his clothes made at his tailor in Hong Kong whenever he went home. They were talking about her new job and the people he knew there when Sophie and Grayson arrived. Grayson walked into the apartment looking nervous, in jeans and a sweatshirt he'd had since he was at the Rhode Island School of Design, where he'd gotten a full scholarship and had graduated 8 years before. He was 30, had brown hair, was sporting 5 days of beard stubble, and wore battered high-topped sneakers with holes in them. He glanced around the room and spoke to no one in particular as he cautiously accepted a cup of eggnog.
"I don't normally do holidays, but Sophie insisted," he said as Sydney smiled warmly at him and kissed her younger daughter.
Sophie was wearing a black leather miniskirt, a black sweater, black tights, and high-heeled black suede boots that reached her thighs. She looked sexy and young and more casual than her sister, and had a more voluptuous figure. Her whole style was younger and less sophisticated than Sabrina's. She wore her hair wild and loose and long in a mane of curls she'd had since she was a child.
"We're glad you could come," Sydney told Grayson graciously, and managed to keep a straight face when the eggnog coated his mustache and turned it white.
Then the doorbell rang again, and it was Steve carrying a big baker's box and a bottle of good California wine. His offerings were gratefully received, and when Sydney peeked inside the box as she set it down, she saw that it was a beautiful Yule log for dessert. She'd been planning to serve Christmas pudding and instantly decided to serve both, and thanked him. She introduced all the young people to each other as they came in, and the chatter of conversation reached a comfortable level, except for Grayson, who sat quietly on the couch, watching the others. If nothing else, he always seemed odd, and Sophie explained that he was shy. Ed commented on his sweatshirt when he sat down next to him and said he had always wanted to go to RISD, but hadn't been accepted, and had gone to design school in London instead. Grayson relaxed a little after that, and it amused Sydney to realize that of the 6 people in the room, 5 of them were designers in one form or another, and 4 of the 6 were in fashion.
"You're the only sane grown-up here, not in fashion or design," she teased Steve,
and she liked being able to count herself among the designers again. It gave form and purpose to her life, aside from feeding her and helping to pay her rent for the past 5 months.
"It's definitely intimidating," he admitted. "I changed shirts 4 times and jackets 2 times before deciding on an appropriate outfit. Having dinner with a bunch of fashion designers definitely puts the heat on." In the end, he had opted for a blue-collared shirt, a tweed jacket, jeans, and brown suede Oxfords that were very stylish.
"You did just fine," Sydney complimented him, impressed by how nice he looked. He was more handsome than she'd realized in court when she'd been distracted by more serious preoccupations than how he dressed.
"I just wore my old school sweatshirt," Grayson said, looking nervous again as he helped himself to more eggnog. And Sophie watched him. She didn't want him to get drunk,
because he was ill at ease with people. They made it to the table at 9 when the turkey was done, and Steve opened the wine and poured it. They were drinking Sabrina's bottles first. Sidney had seated Sabrina next to Steve, and she was on his other side. And she put Ed on Sabrina's other side, with Sophie and Grayson between Ed and herself. And the conversation at dinner flourished, aided by the excellent wine Sabrina had provided. Steve complimented her on it. Steve's Yule log was a big hit for dessert, with the Christmas pudding, which Sidney poured brandy over and lit. And they all talked about how they'd spent Christmas as children. Sophie and Sabrina's warm description of their family traditions brought tears to their mother's eyes. Ed said that his family had always celebrated Christmas and Chinese New Year's, and gave big dinner parties with family and friends for both events. "My family loves a party," he said, and everybody laughed. "We celebrated Hanukkah when I was a kid, but pretty loosely," Steve commented. "My parents let me have a Christmas tree, too, because my friends did. They always envied me, because Hanukkah lasts for 8 days, but they got all their presents at once, which I thought was cooler. And I'm happy to be with you," he added. "My family's all away this year, and I'd be sitting in my apartment feeling sorry for myself tonight if I weren't here, so thank you, Sidney, for inviting me, and to all of you for having me." He raised his glass and smiled at his new client. "I'm an atheist," Grayson announced. "I don't believe in Christmas," he said. And there was silence at the table for a minute. "But I'm having a good time, thank you," he added, as everyone exhaled and he raised his glass too. Sophie suggested charades after dinner, and after several glasses of wine, Grayson was the best one at it, and could guess nearly anything before anyone else could, and his pantomimes were hilarious and made them all laugh. And although she hadn't expected it to be that way, Sidney thought it was one of the best Christmases she'd had in years, despite Andrew's absence. The atmosphere was warm and cozy, and it was a special night among friends who genuinely liked each other and were glad to be together. She noticed that Steve and Sabrina had engaged in conversation repeatedly when she wasn't talking to Ed about fashion. Ed and Sidney talked a little about the new business they were starting, and no one had the bad taste to mention her recent legal difficulties or the threat of an upcoming trial. They had put it aside for the night, and so had Sidney. She was just enjoying everyone. No one made a move to leave until after 1 in the morning, and when Sabrina stood up, Steve offered to take her home, since he didn't live far from her. They all said goodbye reluctantly, and Ed stayed for a few minutes after the others left. "What a lovely evening you gave all of us," he complimented her as he sipped the last of his wine. "And I think you may have started something tonight." He looked at her mischievously and guessed that she had done it on purpose. "Steve and Sabrina?" He nodded, and they both laughed. "I thought that might work. At least I hoped so. I like him. And poor Grayson looked like he was going to fall apart when he walked in. But he rallied. I think the eggnog helped. He's a sweet kid and a very good designer. He just had a lousy childhood and has a lot of issues." "I liked him," Ed said easily. "I liked all of them, and your daughters are fantastic. I could have talked to them all night." "They're good women. I'm very proud of them." He offered to help her clean up and do the dishes, and she told him she'd do it in the morning, and he didn't have to. And he left a few minutes later. She sat alone on the couch after he was gone, and thought about the evening. It had been perfect, and just what she wanted it to be for all of them. Even Grayson had joined in the fun with good humor. They had managed to blend traditions, and the lack of them, between Christians, a Jew, a Buddhist, and an atheist, and shared a warm and wonderful evening, which was what Christmas was all about. And she hoped that wherever he was, Andrew was at peace too.
Chapter 10 On Christmas Day, the morning after her dinner party, Sydney got up early to do the dishes and clean up and thought again about how warm and congenial it had been.